dear listeners, and welcome back to the James Bond Complex, the podcast where we discuss and get excited about the James Bond phenomenon in all its shapes and forms, from Fleming to films and naturally everything in between. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Edgar.
I'm the other guy. I'm Matt.
You are not the other guy.
I know
guy,
I'm not
Matt.
I'm not just the other guy. I'm Matt!
Precisely.
The guy with the French accent.
Croissant. Pépé le Pieu.
Sacre bleu,
ça perd l'hypopète. Speaking of French, there's a French character in the book we'll be talking about today.
Yes.
We haven't talked about a comic book in a while. Wrong. Probably a few weeks ago, we've released a review of No Permission to Die? Permission to Die.
Yes.
Permission.
You have my permission to die, Bond.
Right. Q of all people. Really?
Anyways,
so we went back in time. We took a time capsule back to the late 80s, early 90s to discuss Permission to Die from a friend of the show, Mike Grell. And now we're back in the present day with our friends at Dynamite Entertainment and one of our favorite teams that they've hired since the inception of this James Bond modern-day comic reboot, if you will, Andy Diggle and Casa Languida. First name escapes me. A few months ago, we talked about the first of their two efforts. It was called Hammerhead. We were very positive on that story. We have many pleasant things to say, but they were asked to write and draw a second story titled Kill Chain.
Can you say it again?
Kill Chain.
Kill Chain?
C'est ça. T'as tout compris.
Kill Chain.
You've been busy, though. You just changed job. A lot of overtime, actually.
I hold the book in my hands, but you got to tell me. What's the plot of this book again?
I'm so happy you asked. I spent hours working on this thing about Doreen.
I saw you were still typing away when I came in.
I was proofreading, Matthew. I was improving. So, as the international political scene grows tenser between East and West, enemies prepare their weapons in the shadows, waiting to strike. One such enemy from within is MI6 rogue agent Rika Van de Havik, with whom James Bond 007 spars at the beginning of the story, under the guise of still being a colleague. After a little bit of FaceTime, 007 sneaks away from Rika's with what MI6 deems proof of her treason. She is to sell Britain's dirty laundry to the American CIA in Rotterdam, Netherlands. But before James can play the hero again, Rika's buyer is sniped stone cold dead in public. And just as the hero can take the hired assassin in for questioning, the killer gives 007 that famous Nazi salute before tossing himself off the rooftop. Oops.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of no time to die, this guy couldn't wait to die. Brothers slowly become enemies as the CIA believes it was Bond who killed their contact in Holland. To make matters worse, an MI6 agent is also murdered whilst infiltrating a neo-Nazi gang in Germany who may or may not have a hand in terrorist financing. 007 is sent to pick up the pieces by himself by paying a visit to some Nazi Arschlockers, which is a German word for a-hole, where it turns out Felix Leiter is also on the grounds. After giving the Nazi the good old bum paddle, they once again team up by sharing some intelligence. Someone may be trying to play both the British and the Americans against one another, tearing their alliance from within. Da, da, da. The trail leads the secret agent to an antiques auction in Geneva, Switzerland, where two discoveries are made. First, an incredibly sculpted French agent named Chantal Chevalier, posing as an arts expert, is also investigating terrorist financing. Second, the selling of artifacts believed to be long lost to time are being used to budget Operation Hooded Falcon, although just what that operation entails remains a mystery. Things heat up as the British and Americans are played like pawns in a diabolical game of chess, with the murder of a high-ranking CIA official during a special meeting with M at NATO HQ in Brussels, as well as the killing of agents working for NATO countries around Europe. It is only late in the game when, captured and chained, Bond comes to learn the extent of the evil brewing. Smertspionim, the old Russian counterintelligence agency, has returned in full force, boosted by their latest recruit, Rika van de Havik. Come on, man. Who did
you do that to me all the time.
Touché. Hooded Falcon is a computer virus that will take out online systems and electricity in large parts of Europe as the Russians execute a coup d'etat in Turkey, a geopolitical gold mine for its location between the East and the West. The mission is being facilitated by having NATO members blame each other for all the havoc in their backyard, a North Atlantic termination orchestration, if you will. The climax sees Bond make one final assault on a super-large military plane flying over Turkey, commandeered by Rika and her team, from where they plan to unleash Hooded Falcon. A final battle pits James and Rika, with the latter handling herself extremely well, gaining the upper hand on our protagonist. But just like how all things that go up must come down, in a flash, her big dream has to deal with the gravity of the situation, as Rika is tossed out the door. She was such a big fan of Smertspionim, she might as well lead by example. Bond parachutes to ground level, battered and bruised, where Chantal Chevalier finds him. She promises to look after him, leaving the inspection to a real connoisseur. Thus ends Kill Chain.
Fantastic. There's some puns there. Roger Moore from Heaven is...
Yeah, right.
Giving you, like... You got it, man.
I had originally written, you know, they don't trust each other because of the havoc. And I was like, wait a minute. That bitch's name is the Havoc. Why don't we put that in? Anyways. So thus ends Kill Chain.
Yeah.
And thus begins our conversation of this story. Mm-hmm. We were super high on Hammerhead. Super high. Like, you have no idea. Like, is this incredible?
I'm still super high on Hammerhead.
That's good Hammerhead.
I actually re-listened to that episode. I'm like, yeah, we're right. It's a pretty solid book. Mm. It's of all the, even to this day, I don't think I've had as much fun as Hammerhead. Hammerhead is, but this comes probably the closest to Hammerhead.
This is where I wanted to start the conversation, my dear Matthew. Expectation, a lot of expectations, especially when they announced that the same team was coming back, which it wouldn't have been as Hammerhead was ending. They would have announced that after Hammerhead had finished publication. That'd be a little bit ballsy. They're coming back, and like, we haven't even done finished publishing this one. Maybe the ending sucks. So I'm going to assume the announcement was made after the end of the last issue of Hammerhead.
Probably while they were still publishing. Yeah.
And so I got psyched. Like, I was beyond pumped to learn that Diggle and Casalinguida were coming back. Did they fulfill those expectations, though? That's the real question.
It's a tough order to...
Yeah. That's a tough act to follow. Hammerhead is a real tough act to follow.
I'm going to say no, but they came close.
Mm. Fair answer. Tough, but fair.
And honestly, it's just the fact that they came close says all good Hammerhead is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if the plot is a bit murky.
It is. It's far murkier than Hammer. There was a straightforward quality about Hammerhead. You know, plot twist about Victoria Hunt being the villain aside. It was pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, when you got Smertspionim, you have the Americans, you have the British, you have this rogue agent, you have Chantal Chevalier, you have auctions, you have neo-Nazis. Now, mind you, a lot of these things are red. Well, actually, no. The neo-Nazis are the red herrings. They ultimately, they don't really come into play. In fact, the victims, the NATO secret agent victims, have like SS's carved in their chests. It's like, oh my God, it's the neo-Nazis. Wrong. It's our old friends, the Russians.
But are they... That's the thing. It's never clear to me. Are they actually...
Are they the Russians?
Yeah. Russians? Or did they call themselves Smursh, but they're just...
Well, the fact that it's not... I would say, were it not the Russians, and mind you, they give their name, like one of them is Radkov, which kind of sort of sounds Russian. I feel if they wanted to play it safe and say, no, we don't want to like really stir the pot. These aren't the Russians. I feel they would have said it.
Yeah, I think, but it's still, they're Russian, but are they working for the government?
That we don't really know.
Because you know what it felt to me?
But coup d'etat, Turkey, like...
Yeah, that's modern. But there's the lead guy. I don't remember his name, but...
James Bond?
No, and I'm talking the lead Smursh guy. to me, he feels... Because, I mean, when does the Smursh become the KGB?
Oh, God.
In the 50s, if I'm...
I was about... at most, I would have said the 70s, and that even that would have felt wrong.
So that original version of Smursh has not been in existence for, almost, 70 years?
Well, as your personal friend, retired General Koskov, explained to us in the documentary, the... Spionum that's been deactivated for years, and that was in 87.
That's
so
more than 30 years
but
later.
But it didn't help. What? It did not prevent the bad guys in the living daylights of the film to use it as a cover.
I know, but are they? Is there any link to the original Smursh as an organization? Why would it's hard. It's really weird to use the name of, and I know in Bond books it makes sense for them to call themselves Smursh, because Smursh existed at the time, but to bring that name back, and it's, when you think about it, it's kind of meaningless, because nobody, the guy that's the lead, the Smursh, he can't be, maybe he's the son, or even the grandson of a former Smursh agent, but I don't see why they call them the Smursh, and they're so excited, and they're back, and they're so terrible. They're scaring. I'm like, it's.
Well, I think it's important to note, or to remember, or to not forget that the James Bond stories have always danced with the geopolitical climate of the times they're written or shot or what have you, published. With all due respect to our friends just south of Siberia, their government has been a little funky for the past decade. So I guess they're maybe playing on that.
I got it. I think I got it. Those Smursh agents, like the lead one, is at least from the way he's drawn, probably, I'm going to say, between 50 and 60 years old. Would you agree?
We'll go with that.
Okay. That guy was probably a secret agent before the wall came down, and since then has been very, very discontent. And it's probably like a sort of a former KGB agent of before the wall came down that created a modern version, a secret, super ultra secret version of Smursh. So it's more like an underground version of Smursh. It's not state official, but it's like that's probably what
the coup d'etat in Turkey is the plot point. That's like, well, what is this small band going to do that? Like, and wouldn't like the Russian government go like, hey, who the hell are these people from our own country doing? Like, it's when Rika reveals what they're going to do on the night that they unleash Hooded Falcon that. For me, anyway, sort of said, okay, no, it's really the Russians that are behind this. Otherwise, why they do that? What do they like so much about Istanbul if they're not supported by the Russians? But again, the book, in your defense, the book never really says it.
It's murky. But you know what? The way the book ends promises more of Smursh, more Diggle and Casa Languida. I'm going to mess his name.
Casalam Pasta.
not that bad, but it promises a sequel that they have so far not announced, not teased. And I'm like, I want
to. And that's a couple years ago.
Yeah. I hope Dynamite, like, seriously, guys. And I hope they're listening for once. Jesus, like, bring those guys back.
They're great.
I think stylistically, I think from the writing, I think they got something that's uniquely theirs, but it fits in the Bond canon. It is my favorite team so far.
I'm going to, by the time this is released, I'll have done it a long time ago, but I think I'm going to tweet at everybody there. Dynamite, I'm going to tweet at Dynamite, and I know those two guys are on Twitter. I'm going to tweet in the same tweet, hey, you guys cooking anything? James Bond? No, seriously, it's like, because it's so good. And I agree, I probably, you know, if I really put a gun to my, put a Walther PPK to my head, yeah, I'll take Hammerhead, but this is like really good.
No, this is really good.
Good.
This feels like Back to the Future 2. If you only watch Back to the Future 2, it doesn't feel complete. There's like, it's missing. This is missing something. It's like the way it ends, I'm like, oh boy, Bond is in trouble because Smirch is going out for him.
They just like the good old days in the Fleming novels.
Exactly. So I'm like, what's this promises from Russia with Love, but 21st century version.
Awesome.
Which would be awesome. Like I said, the Smirch going out for revenge just against James Bond.
What
does that look like in the 21st century?
That'd be cool. I don't know why they have their own business model. Maybe
The guy's probably busy too, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not the only thing they do. I know they've, at the time of this recording, which is the final full weekend of August 2019, recently they did announce that the modern, because our Oddjob/Goldfinger story has only got a couple issues left. They did officially announce there is a new Modern Bond story in December, but they haven't given any details. Although it's not those guys. It's somebody else. Well, maybe there's still hope. Maybe that team, this new team, will pick up. Who knows? I have no idea. But as for the story itself, yeah, it's awesome. I do like, and I feel it had been a while since we had read or watched a James Bond story where the stakes were so critically geopolitical. Like, it's NATO, it's the brothers from Langley.
It feels a little bit Octopussy-esque.
Yeah, there's a little bit of octopus in there, I guess you could say. There is a little bit of octopus in there.
Soupçon.
Yeah, a little, just one tentacle. but I like it when they do that. Not, I don't want every James Bond story to do that. You do, you know, every once in a while you need a Spy Who Loved Me. You Only Live Twice. But I do like it when the James Bond stories choose to do that. Let's take today's geopolitical context, what's going on in the world today, let's make these governments matter. There's tension, there's a problem, there's a mystery, and James Bond is government? James Bond 007 is going to solve the problem, and it's like geopolitical stakes, like real ones, because there is tension between NATO and the Russians to this day. This was published like 2000 summer to late 2017. I think maybe that hardcover came out last year, but the issues are like, I think mid to late 2017. You know, it's 2 years later, 1 year later, 2 years later.
2018, this got published, so probably 2017.
Yeah, so we're about 2 years removed from the original monthlies. It's not like it's changed. No. And they did that at a time when the geopolitical scene internationally with the Russians was weird, you know. So you do want to be careful. Fleming eventually chose to take a safer path. You know, he stopped using Smirsch. He created Spectre. You know, you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Know what I'm saying, they decided to maybe be a little bit more ballsy. They said, well, what's effed up on the scene right now? That stuff's kind of effed up. You got Syria, which is just never ending. Turkey's not in turmoil, but because of their positioning, they're always at the center of stuff, either because of what's going on in the Middle East, Russia. Like, it's They did that on purpose. You know, they're playing on what's going on now, and I like it when the movies do that. When the stories do that.
You know, like you said, you have the Spy Who Loved Me, but sometimes you need something that has a little bit more meaning. Like, I don't dislike The Spy Who Loved Me or Moonraker, but sometimes it's sort of has no weight to it when you think. Like, it's fluffy, it's sweet, it's popcorn. Yeah.
It's like it's the most delicious popcorn you can eat. It's still popcorn.
It's still popcorn. So it's empty calories. Where, like, I sometimes, you know, you need your Living Daylights. You need your Casino Royale. You need your, you know what? Even GoldenEye has a little bit more weight because everything, like...
It definitely deals with the early days of post-USSR Russia. You know, there's definitely a lot of that in there.
So, yeah, I'm glad they went back to it. Like, because... Amaret felt a little bit more on the Dire in the Day side with the super cannon.
Well, like a version of Die Another Day that's actually good.
Yes. we'll keep our thoughts on Die in front of the time. But yeah, I love the character, the female character. What's her name again?
Rika Van de Havik.
I liked her. She feels like Victorian 2.0, which is a good thing because I think we both agreed that we like Victoria.
Oh, she hot.
she's also very attractive.
She kind of looks like Victoria Hunt.
Yeah.
I don't think they draw many female. Well, Chantal Chevalier looks a little bit different. She
but I think it's just the guy as a type. Like,
I want her slim. I want her fit. I want her
blonde. But or I want her bleached. Blonder-er.
Isn't she bleached?
She bleached.
She bleached. She's super bleached. And yeah, she's awesome. And there's a fisticuffs twice in this book. Well, so the first one's not for real because they're like spies playing off each other. We're friends, right? Right. So they're just sparring. But even during that sparring session, Rika's kicking his ass. She's really kicking his ass on that planet.
Oh, no, yeah. She's kicking.
James Bond is not winning that fight.
No. She's a better fighter than him.
It is quite something to see. We've seen Bond get his tush spanked a little bit in the past, but we've never really seen it at the hands of a, like, Xenia comes close.
In the movies? Yes. In the books? Never.
No.
No woman. But I'm thinking maybe other comics, perhaps maybe Zula, but she really, like, beats the hell out of him, like, puck, puck.
Oh, no, she's tearing him a new one.
She's almost blinding him on one panel, and he's almost gone for just... And it's what I like about James Bond. It's when he... Like, defeats the villain, but not on the villain's whole, like, on let's take the fight with Oddjob. He's not going to beat Oddjob by pounding him with his fist. Oddjob is going to just, no, he has to trick him to kill himself. And that's what I like about James Bond, when he creates a situation where the villain's going to kill himself. Like, Gustav Graves in your favorite Bond movie, like, he has this stupid armor that, yeah, and Bond just like, whoop, presses the button and he electrocutes himself. For her, he just opens the exit door and she's
It's a quick death too.
It's a quick death.
Quick death. Like, she has no time to.
She has time to think about her life when she's falling for, like, probably.
Right, but she has no time. She can't. By the time she understood what just happened, like, she's too far away from the plane to say anything to Bond. Like, for Bond, she's like, it's over.
It's over.
She was there. Half a second later, she ain't there. She gone. You know,
she has to make peace with her, what she did in her life.
But I do like, I always go back to one of my favorite scenes in Dr. No, which is when Bond goes to visit Miss Taro because of that idea of, well, they're pretending to hook up, but they're actually working for their own side, so they're playing game. Well, who's going to outplay who? And Hammerhead, there I go. Kill Chain kind of begins like that. I mean, yes, there's the Spionim, you know, introduction, but the first, like, James Bond scene is them sparring and, like, you know, as long as I'm on top. And then they make out. You know what I'm saying? They make out. Then she goes into the shower, and he's like, dumb bitch, I'm going to steal her stuff. And then she comes out of the shower, dumbass, I got your prince. You know, but I like those moments in the like, James Bond stories. Who's gonna
one up
the other bit more efficiently, or who's gonna have the last laugh as they continuously one up one another? And it continues. There's a scene where are they in Brussels? I think they're in Brussels, where James Bond arrives at a hotel room. It's like, I got you now, you dirty mother. Then he opens and, oh, she wasn't even here. And that's when the drones kill the CIA. Like, it's, she's good. Oh, no, she's good.
She's good. She's the closest thing that I've seen to the female Bond equal that I'm like, yeah, she might actually be better than him in some aspects.
She's not Domino. She's a Fiona Volpe, but with killer fighting skills. Yeah, yeah, she's like, she'll actually like kill you. She won't order. She won't. Fiona Volpe will say, "You kill Bond." Rika will go like, "No, it's fine. I'm gonna kill Bond." You know, I like that. It's fun.
No, she's a great character, and she gets shot once she makes her defection, because her defection is actually like not. She fakes her death, basically. Like Bond shoots her, and she falls in the early in the river, and she's presumed dead. And for a while, she actually is dead, because when they find her, they have to like revive her. And she has she calls it the rose. It's sort of a scar that from the bullet that she has from Bond's gun, and it's she's like, oh, you gave me a souvenir, and she really wants to. Kill James Bond
really
for that.
Kill him.
She really wants.
But I like it. I like those villains that, and we don't have that many of them, but those villains that, I guess maybe would Zhao be one of them? We keep coming back to Die Another Day. Like those villains, because your Ajab doesn't really care about James Bond.
No.
But the fight is still awesome. You know, I think Zhao kind of cares about James Bond. He's like, you know, I would like to like kick this guy's ass.
He hates him.
You know. And Rika's is in that school.
How's this for a punchline?
Oh yeah, how's that for a punchline?
You know, also, probably Trevelyan probably hates him.
Oh, absolutely.
Villains
that have been
like scarred or damaged in some way by Bond. Usually, they have like, that extra little.
And Scaramanga, he hasn't been scarred, but he's like psyched about facing off against James Bond. There's still that personal thing.
Got a boner for James Bond in that movie.
Yeah. Makes the movie awesome. Such a good movie.
Oh, that's the funniest thing I've ever done all day.
Oh, monsieur. but Rika is cut from that cloth.
Yes.
And I like those villains. It's like, not only am I the villain, therefore I will try to kill James Bond, I personally can't stand James Bond, so I'm going to kill him anyway.
You know what? Probably like, Miranda Frost. You could probably... What's it? What? Die? Like, I think we need to talk about Die Another Day sometime. But yeah, even Miranda Frost, she kind of hates James Bond.
Yeah, she does too.
She
Although she fights with Jinx at the end.
Yeah. But her entire relationship, it's, I hate you. Okay, I'm going to bone you, but deep down, like I feel like I don't care.
Hate sex.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Honestly, I feel like, okay, segue, we might cut this, but I feel when she and Bond had sex, she was probably doing what I call the dead fish. She was just lying there, and Bond's like, yeah, I'm giving it to you. Just like,
oh. I'm doing it on a bed of ice.
Something like
she's
that.
She's sort of lying there going like, whatever.
Okay, I'll grab his gun. I'll remove the bullets. He seems to enjoying himself.
I also like how the book starts off with a lot of surprises where, like, oh my God, Rika is selling our dirty laundry to this unknown person. We shortly after find out that it is a CIA person. But then the person she's selling the information to gets killed. So right off the bat, the book does a good job at establishing that really nothing is what it seems, and there's going to be a lot of twists. Now, you got the neo-Nazi twist.
Yeah.
You have the antiques twist. You have the hotel room and the drone twist. It's like every time it looks like the good guys might start to get the upper hand. No, the bad guys know exactly how to play their cards.
There's one twist that I actually really enjoyed. It would not work in a movie. It only works in illustration form, I think. It's when he goes to the bar and he starts sort of picking a fight with neo-Nazis. And
so good.
Turns out that one of them is actually Felix Leiter. And the entire time you're like, that does look like Felix Leiter, but I'm not sure because it's illustration and you're not meant to immediately realize. And when it turns out that it is Felix in disguise, it's pretty funny. Like they have, it's a good like Bond and Felix story.
That's another thing that this duo gets right. It's the relationship between Bond and Felix. You can tell that they know each other very well. They know exactly how to do business with each other. You know, what's the best way to share information over bourbon or scotch? I thought that was a really cool scene. Going back to the neo-Nazi bar, I remember the first time I read that chapter. I think I had the boner. Because he goes into the bar and it looks like crap. It's, you know, the neo-Nazis. Everybody knows neo-Nazis are dirty and don't wash. So the bar looks like crap. And he goes in and he orders like this, like, why would they serve that type of a drink? But he's doing it on like, you know, would you have this? And I Google translated. He basically says, F off. Would you have that year instead? Like, Engländer. Going to kill you now.
Oh, I love when Germans say Engländer in those stories. There's not that much negativity I can throw at it. I mean,
I'll give one thing.
Go ahead.
Not enough Chantal Chevalier, because they set her up to be pretty awesome. She's, you know, she's part of an action scene.
Agreed. Not enough Chantal Chevalier, sir.
I do like her quip about, are you from British intelligence? That, based on what I've been seeing, that's kind of an oxymoron, wouldn't you say? I like that line.
And I like the way she's drawn with the blue shirt and the tight, short black hair.
Yeah, very good, very good. And her dress fits well in all the right places.
as always.
Right. Draw whatever you want, I guess. Yeah, no, it's a little disappointing insofar as they set her up. You think she's the leading lady, but no, not really. And you don't see her until the last panel.
To me, I mean, I'm going to say it. It feels like they never finished their story. I think part three, they had a part three in mind. It feels like we're still waiting for it.
And what's unfortunate is, you know, these days, Dynamite Entertainment is mandating when they hire their teams, they hire them for 12 issues. You know, we have James Bond Origin, which actually has been teased as coming back, but just a tease, it's not official. You know, that ended this month, number 12. Obviously, The Odd Job / Goldfinger, we're at 10, was came out this week. It was 10. We've got a couple months left. From what I understand, the thing that started in December is another year-long thing. Back in those days, quote, back in those days, 2 years ago, there were 6-issue arcs.
Yes.
This needed 12 issues. This needed 12 issues.
Yes.
Develop Spionem. Develop who's backing them. Develop Chantal Chevalier.
Or split the plot in two, actually. They do the... there's sort of like a Bond. Bond is assumed to be a traitor, and Smir Spionen is back. They should do it. Bond is a traitor. At the end, you discover...
It's Smir Spionen, yeah.
It's Smir Spionen. And then part two is Bond on the attack. It tries, and at the end, like, tease part three, which Smir Spionen... You're from Russia, but love the 21st century version where they have like a revenge plot.
Yeah, that's true.
Go crazy with the revenge plot. I'd love to see what they would come up with, a revenge plot, like a type of story.
So would I. And you brought the point up about part one would be, or the first half rather, would be Bond hunted down by the CIA. It's kind of just brought up in the story. It's not really developed. Well, Felix Leiter's like angry at him for a couple of panels because it's like, why'd you have my boss killed? Like two panels later, it's like, I know you didn't kill my boss, so just punch me and pretend you make it look like you escaped. They don't really.
It's almost play like an afterthought. That. Should, if they did 12 issue, part one ends or begins actually with the terrorist attack, then, you know, we're armchair quarterback coaching, like
But it's the fact that we know that they go for 12 issues these days, and they only went for six also back then. It feels it's like, wow.
Like I'm still, like I'm with my part three. Come on. Come on, Andy. Come on, Casalanguida. Yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure. Con plaisir, señor. Yeah, so it is. I agree. It's unfortunate that A, that team never came back, and B, whether
yet.
Them.
Yeah, hasn't come
that's
back
true.
Yet.
That's true. That's true. Although, again, you know, I don't remember the names of the writer and the artist of what started in December, but it's not them. So already we're, you know, whatever comes next, you know. But they've been extremely, extremely solid. And I like the way, I'm sure we talked about this a little bit on Hammerhead, although I didn't re-listen to that episode. And we recorded that like in December, January, like early, and we're in August. So I don't really remember what we said in detail, but I really love Casalinguida's art. I love it's a perfect marriage between realism and a cartoon. It's kind of the best way I can put it, because the shading, the lighting, the brightness of the colors. Well, this is obviously a cartoon, and you know some of the features are exaggerated. Like there are a lot of panels where you, unless it's a close up or it's intentional, you don't see the characters. It's almost like a shadow here. It's just black. Somehow that presses the right buttons for me. Like that art just works for me.
It's highly stylized, but it's just real enough. It's almost cartoonish sometimes, but it's just on the verge. Like you see that he actually probably does a lot of referencing, because it feels like when you go to a place, it feels like an actual place.
It
you
does
see
actually.
Buildings. Yeah, but some of the action. Some of the character, their features, their like nobody looks like that in real life, but it fits the feel that they're going for. They want a comic book for adults. This is I wouldn't give that to a 12-year-old, maybe a 15-year-old. I was 17-year-old, but a kid like an 8-year-old is gonna look at this. It's boring.
Depends. I mean, it starts with James Bond and a woman having sex, so that will probably titillate them a little bit. There's a lot of blood. They keep it pretty violent.
Yeah, that's they keep why it pretty you violent. Might not want to expose your children to.
They don't go as graphic as Ellis and Masters.
Oh, that one is bloody as hell. Oh, the guy that gets his throat sliced open and just glues it back together.
Crazy glues it together. That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome, actually.
So they don't go that hardcore. It's like, but it is pretty R-rated. Like, Ellis and Masters is like X-rated.
One scene I want to bring up, because if there's a scene that I'm like, when I first read it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of weak. Bond has been through most of his adventure. Like, he's discovered that some organization is planning an attack, and he gets smuggled to an airbase because apparently the Rika Van de Havoc,
because she created the havoc. You know what I'm saying?
I know. I didn't pick up on it until he just said, "Oh, I feel so silly." Rika is planning to steal a plane and sort of use another plane to infect the
system. They're going to transmit the Hooded Falcon virus as they're receiving the gasoline from, you know, those planes that are just gasoline suppliers. Or they're going to transmit Hooded Falcon. That's how they're going to le propager, their,
like, share.
Yeah, share. Make it go viral.
But if he goes to the base and he finds out, well, he's captured, like, everyone there is a traitor. Or actually a Smirch agent, and they tie him to a chair, and he's about to get, like, they tell him, oh, we're going to cut your finger, we're going to torture you, we're going to, your buddy's going to be found, like, mutilated, and blah, blah, blah. And, like, they're about to cut his finger, they're holding his hand, and Bun, actually, the way he gets out, I'm like, I wish they came out with something a little bit more clever. He just, like, manages through sheer willpower, pull the table off. It's cool, but I'm like,
it's a Hulk smash
moment. It's you know, brute strength. I'm like, Bond's.
I do like that he kills everybody with the table.
I wish, you know, somehow he sabotaged it, did something to the table, and that it just the fact that he just lifts it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of, it's kind of weak.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think writers and artists and filmmakers, they have a lot of fun. Well, what kind of trouble can we put James Bond in? Or what sort of trap can we put him in? And sometimes the trap is so good. James Bond is so clearly going to die.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh shit, Deuce, how exactly X, are you going to get out of this?
I removed the chair.
You want a job? You know? Well, didn't we talk about one in Forever and a Day?
What was it in Forever and a Day that irked me? I was like, oh.
No, there was something in Forever and a Day that caught our attention. And now there's this, the chair, not the chair, but
the table.
Springing the table from its screws on the floor. Well, he's really strong.
He's really strong.
I see what you mean. Did it bother me as much as you? Maybe not, because I was enjoying the story so much. But it is, it's like that moment in Spectre where they're back in London, they hood him, and they put those like really annoying, super tight, like plastic. Tight wraps, and he hooded, and with the tight wrap, he kills everybody around him, takes the hood off, and just rips the tight wrap. It's like, I'm not sure it's that easy, but anyways, okay, you're James Bond.
Yeah, sometimes you write something and it just there's no other way out. It's what it is.
I will say this: the last panel of that issue, where it's a one panel that takes up the entire page. He looks really angry.
Oh yeah,
it's
yeah.
a shot quote. It's a shot down from below. Angle, yeah, down angle. He's dressed in black. He's living let die in it. He's living daylights in it. Yeah, there you go.
It's pretty badass. Like that's the thing. They make Bond in those books. When he's charming, he's drawn in a way that he's super like suave. But when he gets danger mode. Bond, he's rough and tumble. He's
yeah, no, absolutely. They do get that down pat. I don't think anybody so far has failed in that. You know, I don't think we'll give every story arc the same level of praise. There's one that comes to mind that I have a couple issues with.
I know which one.
But as far as that. Straddling that fine line between he is psycho killer and he's super charming, you cannot resist him. Pretty much everybody that they've hired over at Dynamite has understood that and has played those two things really, really well.
But I really like this one.
Yeah. Oh, they're great at it.
No, there's moments where he gets...
I would even say Ellison Masters only really found that in Eidolon. Yeah. I'm not sure he's super charming in Varger.
He's kind of pig in Varger.
Yeah. Whereas there's a little bit of charm in Eidolon. Whereas these guys, it's like they got it.
And yes, one of the aspects that some of the other teams haven't gotten is the like sexy James Bond. Because in the first two, Varger and Eidolon, he doesn't really have.
Well, there's Bird Whistle, but she's like out of the picture pretty soon.
Yeah.
Well, that's Chantal Chevalier. That's who I wanted to be the leading lady. She's not really the leading lady.
Well, we have her leading lady.
It's the villain.
It's Rika. Yeah. Rika's our leading lady. She's just...
a bitch.
Cold art killer. Yeah. A B-I-T-C-H. Mm. She's not a nice person. She's...
And it's cool because she likes being bad.
Oh, she likes
she's not conflicted.
She is so happy to be the person that she is. It's like it's the happiest villain ever. She just wants to kill James Bond. She's
so excited.
She's so excited.
Turned on.
Can I kill him now? And when they promise her, because they promise that you'll kill him, when she's denied the promise, it's like we kind of need to torture him. You kind of need to take the plane. And she's like she's pissed off. It's funny.
Yeah. Oh no, she wants him bad.
And there's a moment where, the terrorist attack with the drones, and that's a thing that I've noticed in movies. The third Olympus Has Fallen movie, I think it's called The Angel Has Fallen.
I'm Morgan Freeman. I'm the president of the United States.
Again. in that movie, there's an attack with drones, and something that's sort of permeating the culture right now. I think drone attacks there was one, I think, a few months ago where somebody...
It's interesting that you bring that up. We've gone from a period, 10, 15 years ago, where drones really were a military thing. You didn't buy drones on Amazon. Now you buy drones on Amazon. Well, what's happening now are these restrictions. You can't fly it up more than yay high. You can't fly it further than yay far. I don't know if that rule exists. The height, yes. I don't know about there must be certain regions where you can't fly over such and such area. It's because these things are super accessible. You want to buy a drone? Let's buy one now on Amazon. Like, it's not difficult.
Oh, yeah, I can order one right now.
So it's cool that Schmierspionen are using drones to assassinate someone.
It is cool, but the thing is, drones actually, I hope they use them as a plot point eventually in Bond movies, because there's something terrifying about a fleet of drones coming, because... It's like fighting flies. How do you fight flies?
Bats, like bats.
Yeah. Are you gonna punch every one of them to not know? You're gonna die.
You're overwhelmed.
Yeah. So drones.
Nice little moment nice moment in the context of a violent James Bond story. Nice moment where the drones reach NATO HQ. And there's this meeting between, I can't remember the name of the CIA guy, but the CIA boss and M. And so they... Like, the drones fire once on the window, and dude's like, thank Christ for bulletproof glass. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, let's double our efforts now. And we don't really see what they do to him, but...
They explode him.
They explode him?
Yeah, they blow the thing up, so...
Thank goodness M was hiding behind that table so the drones couldn't spot him and left him alive.
He goes, boom. And I love... After he's, because yeah, Felix lets him go, and M and Moneypenny go to a restaurant.
Oh.
And that's probably, this is a Roger Moore moment. I wish he was still alive, and I would shoot that scene today. If he was still alive, I just CGI, like, we could probably do a deep fake with a young, like, old Roger Moore and deepfake him as a young one if you were still
stop
alive.
It, Matthew. Stop
and
it.
And just for that scene, Arnie.
So good.
It is. And that's something they could... we say that all the time, I feel, when we read the people making the movies, get your ideas from the books. Stop recycling the Fleming material that's over 50 years old. People have done great things. Well, I wouldn't say recycling, but, you know... Get ideas from somebody else other than Purvis and Wade. I'm not somebody who's been particularly anti-Purvis and Wade. It's just that it feels like it might be time to...
New blood. New
ideas,
well, that's why Phoebe and...
Waller-Bridge?
Phoebe and... They hired Phoebe Waller-Bridge and someone else... A script doctor, they call him the script doctor. Like, that's probably why they're brought on, because these scripts, these Purvis and Wade scripts, while they're fine, you know, the last few have needed brush ups.
Well, I think also they suffer from so many cooks in the kitchen. But this moment where M shows up and a waiter like asks him about like his order and like he orders something and it's like, oh, good sir, I told you to order this from this restaurant. And turns out the waiter is Bond.
Oh, it's even better. No, it's even better. It's a great order. In fact, I remember recommending that when we had dinner at Blades. They bring up Blades.
Oh, true. You're right.
Oh, it's so good. It's
deep cut. Deep cut.
Who the heck? 007. Like, it's literally, that's how the scene... When I read that the first time, I loved it so much. It felt so... Some things just feel right. And you know how I like my Bond. And I did think of Roger when they played that... Or when they revealed that scene. I'm like, that is so good.
And I feel like Roger was the probably the more foodie. Like, like he's the one that had probably the most meals on screen.
Something I didn't pick up the first time I read it. the panel before Bond says that is a shot from behind M and Money, because they're talking shop.
Oh,
Money,
Penny recognizes it.
Waiter coming, sir. She knows who it is. She lets him play the game a little bit. It's fun. It's good. God bless her heart. We love Money, Penny. But yeah, it's great. It's great stuff.
It's a great moment. It's a brilliant book. Honestly, I'm trying to, like, negative or positive, but it's just, I'm just going to.
Well, I mean, the negative, I would say the negative isn't really Diggles or Casadanguida's fault. It's just if they were mandated to write that today, now that Dynamite is letting their story arcs run an entire year, I think we would have had an even better version of the great story mm-hmm. that we have. But that's neither Diggle or Casadanguida's fault.
Also, I'm going to say it. I think Hammerhead is a home run, and this is, okay, not even certain that my baseball metaphors are going to be.
A hat trick?
No, I'm not that. I think that's a triple.
Yeah.
So you strike, and then you get everyone, like, you manage to make it to third base.
Mm-hmm. Comfortably.
Comfortably.
He doesn't have to slide.
Doesn't have to
and
slide.
He just trots to third base.
It's close to a home run, but no. They finally caught the ball. They managed to. So.
Or here's a better one. Hammerhead is like that home run, upper deck, the crowd goes wild. That's right. We did that. And you take your time. It's obviously the bottom of the ninth inning. It was a grand slam. You won the game. It upper deck, it went beyond. It's in the streets. Kill Chain is like the inside the park home run. You had to work a little harder. The outfield had to screw a few things up, but you made it all the round back to home plate. You still scored and you won the game. It was a little bit more difficult. Whereas Hammerhead was just like, yes, mic drop, you know.
that sounds about right.
But he still hit a home run. You still scored your point. So yeah, so the thus ends the conversation about Kill Chain.
Yeah, I think I feel like I should sound more excited but it's just like it's great. But it's no Hammerhead.
Yeah. There was a special quality about Hammerhead. I think it was because of the villainess, because the weapon was so cool.
Yeah, there is a cool element. And this is just, there's too much ideas, and it feels like there's still more. I'm still waiting for part three.
Yeah, and it's true. It ends on a semi-cliffhanger.
Or
a like, the mission is done, and Bond has saved the day. But we're teased that the real villain has not been vanquished, and unfortunately, we never got another story arc, which is something that we do these Dynamite comics once every 5 or 6 months, so the next one won't be for a while probably. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the Felix Leiter story would technically be our next one. If we go by publication order,
I don't know if that came out before or after Black Bucks.
We'll have to check that out. At some point, they were releasing them at the same time, so
yeah. And also, there's the one shots. I don't know where we're gonna cover.
It's true, we have never done a one shot. I think what we'll do. I have the. Do you have the hardcover that collects all?
I have all of them, but okay. Digitally. Like I said, honestly, I'm on the verge of starting to buy them. Physically,
they're nice, beautifully packaged.
The hardcover version looked nice, and
they have the special features at the end.
Yeah, I saw that. They're gonna look nice also on the shelf. And honestly, it's to read this digitally, it was just a nightmare because some you have them by series, and some of the issues were in Kill Chain miniseries, and others were in the first iteration of the James Bond ongoing miniseries. So it was like going back and forth from.
That's weird.
It was ridiculously like. Inconvenience. I'm like, that kind of pushed the needle.
Yeah. Also, it's also convenient to have them like that. I mean, I'm going to try to keep my hardcovers in the best condition possible, but it's a great option where I can never have to touch my monthlies again because I'd like to keep those in the absolute best condition possible. And I can, while still respecting that book, I can take it off the shelf and read it or bring it with me somewhere. Before you leave tonight, I'll let you leaf through the James Bond Origin Volume 1. That one's really nice, too. That one's really nice. Great stuff. Great stuff. You know, not quite Hammerhead, but they can all be Hammerheads. But we very much enjoyed Kill Chain.
Yeah, I think you said everything. But wait, Edgar.
We're not
still
done.
No, there's still one thing.
What do you mean?
There's something I need to know. Do we have people everywhere?
We do have people everywhere. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't know. Tell me.
We might have spoken to one earlier today, in fact. Spoiler. Or teaser. Cock tease.
Oh.
But more on that at another time. For now, please visit us everywhere at the triple W. I like saying the triple W. I sound like a retarded person. At www.thejamesbondcomplex.com, which also operates as our shadow Tumblr account, is how I refer to it now. We have a YouTube channel. You know, anybody can too. Even you can too at this point. We have the Facebook page, which is probably, if I'm going to come out and say something a little controversial, I think our Facebook page is the most successful thing we do. I feel we get a lot of activity on that.
I think we do. I even the Instagram, I get a lot of cool interactions with a lot of people.
Nice, so nice. Yeah. Now, I've never touched the Instagram.
Yeah, I need to use this. Do you want the...
Nope.
No, okay.
I do enough on the Twitter, which is, by the way, at the Bond Complex, and on the Facebook. We tend to share Facebook. It's kind of 50-50. Twitter is like 80-20 me.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like...
But Instagram's 100% at zero you. So it's like, at the end of the day, you're still doing more because I don't touch Instagram at all, whereas you still touch Twitter a little bit. So
less and less so. it's more your baby than mine.
I should do a better job. I do it sometimes, and other times I forget. Like, yes, it's kind of cute when we respond as the James Bond Complex, but I think sometimes whoever I'm tweeting at should probably know that it's me or it's you. So sometimes I'll do, here's the response, brackets, Edgar. You know, but I'll sometimes forget that.
I don't know. You speak for me. I trust what you say.
Right. I trust the Instagram account.
Thank you.
So we got Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. We're hosted at Anchor, anchor.fm.
Yep.
Thank you very much. It's great. Don't you just love free things?
Freaking love them.
That's great. Where else are we? Well, of course, where can you not purchase us, but download us and listen to us, actually? Anchor, yes, but there are other slightly more popular platforms like Google Play, which is a big one, major one. Another major one is iTunes, where you can search for the James Bond Complex, subscribe to the James Bond Complex, write a review for the James Bond Complex, and give us a 5-star, nom, 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 a 5-star glowing golden gun review. They should make them look like guns just for us.
They should.
Get rid of them stars.
Well, they're changing the entire thing. So.
That's true. We'll put in a word. Maybe we'll have little Scaramanga pistols.
Little guns. We want little guns. Can we have little guns?
We're also individually. We do our own little things online individually. Maybe not as active as our complex accounts, but I try. I'm on Twitter at @00pop. Those are the words @00_OH_pop.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram. More on Instagram though, but Twitter it's Matt O'Clair with 2 T's, and on Instagram it's Matt O'Clair 007.
Sexy. And just as James Bond is always wont to return that rotten scoundrel him, so too will the James Bond Complex in Je le sais tu moi?
Something else.
Something
well, technically
else.
Could be something that we've discussed before or is something new. I don't know. Okay.
That's like Donald Rumsfeld saying, well, we know the weapons are there. They're east, north, west, and south. They're there.
Well, okay. Technically, we're recording Casino Royale Redux, but the schedule can always move.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I can't overpromise on...
Regardless, whatever the next episode is, c'est toujours un plaisir et à la prochaine.
Au revoir.